Prime.
What about Night Prime, Nick?
Hello, Properly Howard fans. This week we're taking a break from our coverage of Felonies and Fugazis to do a feedback episode. Also, have a look at what is happening over at the Lorehounds. They're about to start their coverage of House of the Dragon. Look for their coverage of Acolyte. All right, without further ado, here is comic Steve Osborne. Steve, how do you feel about the prospect of an Axel Foley sequel?
I'm all for it.
I'm surprised.
Because of Beverly Hills Cop 3?
Well, Beverly Hills Cop 3 seems like it suffered from the problem that a lot of sequels have. And I think we've talked about this at length with our sequel season. What is it about this particular sequel that has you optimistic?
Beverly Hills Cop 3.
It was so bad that it came nowhere to go but up, huh?
Yeah, I just feel like Alfred has just basically talked to the Beverly Hills Cop franchises. What do we do when we fall down? We pick ourselves back up.
Or it's just another cash grab. Now, I'll tell you what made me most excited about this, and it wasn't Bronson Pinchot, although that is somewhat exciting. It wasn't Paul Reiser, although that is somewhat exciting. It wasn't Gordon, what's his name?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah, right. It was Kevin Bacon.
I know that was coming.
Kevin Bacon that made me excited about this. And
the replacement for Ronnie Cox, essentially, right? The new Bogomil?
Yeah, the new Bogomil. Now, because this is just the way my mind works, and I don't know anything about the film, so this is not a spoiler, but when I see it, an actor like Kevin Bacon take on a bit part like that, my mind immediately thinks that that character will be a specific kind of character in the story.
Pedophile?
I mean, he does play that part pretty well.
Imagine being like, I don't know.
Typecast?
I don't know if he's like A-list, but I mean, he's so well known that like he's got like...
He's A-list, like, for sure. He's the kind of guy that if you want in your movie, and it's a Tom Cruise movie, it's going to be Tom Cruise that makes the direct call to Kevin Bacon, right?
So imagine being an A-list actor and simultaneously typecast as a pedophile.
That kind of rounds into my view on this. I feel like if I see an actor of that caliber in that kind of bit part, I immediately think, well, that guy's the heavy. There's going to be a big reveal at the end that this goes all the way to the chief of police's office. And it's really Kevin Bacon who's the final boss that you've got to defeat.
Maybe. I also think that this might be Kevin Bacon's new phase. Like, this might be his new, you age out of certain things, right? But then you age into something new, right? I mean, that's kind of he might have himself a little bit of a regeneration as kind of like, you know, he's not. Maybe he's not the star anymore, but maybe he's that guy that just adds the gravitas, right? Like he's...
I mean, got me excited about the movie. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I mean, the idea of a still at this age, wisecracking Axel Foley pushing a ornery Kevin Bacon's buttons, just, it works, man. It works for me a lot.
All right. I was excited in the trailer to hear the Pointer Sisters again.
Oh, the way that that's a remarkable bit of teasing, right? Like, you know how you've got the Axel Foley, you know, you got the Axel F playing pretty well, right? But the way that that the Neutron Dance, like that, those lyrics come through at the end. It's almost like the Vader deep breathing in a teaser trailer, you know? And I just love that that was the choice, right? It wasn't the or anything like that. It was the Pointer Sisters got to have their, like, they were as iconic as anything else in Beverly Hills Cop. And I think that that's what really got me excited, is that the music is so important, right? I mean, the Beverly Hills Cop original soundtrack is just about bulletproof. It is so sensational.
I can say without any reservation that if I needed neutrons to be explained to me, and I could either choose a scientist who's an expert on neutrons or the Pointer Sisters, I would choose the Pointer Sisters every time.
What I know about neutrons is there's heat and compulsion.
And the compulsion is to dance, I suppose.
Yeah, well, just the burning is so intense. To the point where it reduces you to a base level, right? Like it's I'm just
at the molecular level.
Like that is it. I am just burning, doing the neutron dance. The best multitasking you can do is to burn and to dance. That's it. You got nothing else. I mean, it's a miracle they can even sing about it.
All right. So to extend our conversation about sequels, we have an audio message from David of the Lorehounds. He wants to talk about Dune 3, which you voiced a bit of skepticism about.
Mm-hmm. Hey, fellas. Regarding Dune 3, here is my argument for why I think it will be okay. And it won't end up in a yub-yub moment. It won't be dog shit like Steve so rightly pointed out that many of our beloved titles were. Oftentimes is because the studios are going for the cash grab. They're going for the cynical cash grab. So if we look at Planet of the Apes, the original movie, right, which was groundbreaking and shocking and a commercial success, as well as an amazing artistically driven film, the immediate sequel was absolutely bonkers and is not that great of a movie, but it was driven by the studio. They were like, oh, we got to capitalize on this. And it got pushed really fast. Whereas Denis Villeneuve is taking his time with it. I believe he's got a strong artistic vision, and as much as the studio, I'm sure, is pushing for him to release part three, he's saying, no, I got another project I want to do. I've got the concept written. I'm going to let it sit for a while, and I'm going to come back to it when I'm ready to come back to it. And I think he's got enough cachet and clout in the industry to be able to resist the push from the studios. And so I think, along with Anthony, I feel optimistic for this. While at the same time, I completely recognize and agree with Steve's general assessment that most sequels get run into the ground. But I think in this case, it's different because the studio isn't driving this. Denis Villeneuve is driving this. And he doesn't seem like he's allowing himself to be pushed for the cynical cash grab.
What do you think about that, Steve?
I think it's optimistic, and I do believe there is some evidence to suggest that, but because Villeneuve sort of did the unimaginable, right? Took the novel that many had considered unadaptable. Yeah. And not only adapted it, but turned it into a huge commercial success, right?
Right.
So my only counterpoint to that would be, one, I like I say, it's optimistic in the sense that that the studios are as enamored with his artistic vision as they are enamored with the box office success. Do you think that the studio, I think there's a touch of naivete to say that the studio would be like, hey, you know what, if it doesn't make a lot of money, but it really captures the story, we'd be okay with that. So that's not the case. I don't think in any studio project, right? You know, so they're hoping for another Cake and Eat It 2 experience. My concern is I'm going to walk away from this world, do some things, and I'm going to come back. Kind of reminds me of, I mean, or at least it makes me nervous when I think of things like the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Peter Jackson could do no wrong.
No,
after Return of the King, and you'll be first in line to say that. I mean, he just did it. He did the thing, and then he's like, "I'm gonna go King Kong for a while."
I don't know about this. I had reservations about at least a couple of his choices in that movie. I didn't have any.
Your relationship with Lord of the Rings is much different than your relationship with the text.
That's true. That's true. That's right. I mean, the Hobbit trilogy was unwatchable, and so much so that I didn't watch it. And I think I saw a few scenes on an airplane once. And it just, I couldn't do it. So I think that the better comparison here is maybe like The Godfather, because in the same way, Godfather Part 3 was delayed, same visionary, same world. You brought back your key actor for it. And it was just not the same. And so there's something... Maybe there's something about the wild success that a director has, where like Friedkin, where he's had so much success that no one actually can tell him anything. And so you've done a couple films that were amazing, and now you're the it guy, and you're not taking any advice from anyone. And maybe you're not even seeking advice from anyone. I don't know. I still feel optimistic about Dune 3, but there is something about wild Hollywood success that kind of breaks your brain for a while. Because Coppola has put out some really bad stuff as well.
We talked about this. Do we feel like he's had more bad than good?
It's probably more bad than good. But... If you do the best film ever, right, and then you follow it up with a film that's even better than the first one, it's like, how does that not break your brain? Like, if you ask me, like, what's your third favorite Coppola movie, I couldn't tell you. Yeah. I mean I know the first two. I don't know. I don't know what my third favorite Coppola movie would be. Anyway. So, yeah, I still feel optimistic. There is it's a very long precedent for at some point a franchise falling off the table. And it usually happens around two or three.
Well, and also I think there's something to be said, too, for. And again, I don't want, you know, feel free to make comments for all the Dune stands out there. But like for those of us out, like for you and I, who are. Much, you know, I don't know much about the novel. My daughter's trying to read it, and I encourage her to continue her journey.
You're a supportive father, even though she's chosen a life path that you wouldn't have chosen yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know what? This is what a progressive father looks like in 2024. You read Dune if that's what you feel that you, this is where you are right now.
And then in private, you talk about to your wife, like maybe it's just a phase.
I'm like, yeah, I'm just like, can we get a DNA test? The thing about Dune, from somebody who's definitely on the outside looking in and whose really only introduction to it was to hear about how bad the 84 movie was from so many different sources. But there's a lot of other Dune books and no one's talking about those. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's because the Dune world gets more complex or it gets more complicated. Or
I know it gets weirder. I think it gets a lot more weird.
Well, and that's the other thing is that there's some weirdness that is not in his books, right? So this kind of starts to go. So when does it become Dune, and when are we going to start seeing Villeneuve's Dune as opposed to, you know?
Well, I think we've already seen Villeneuve's Dune. I think that we've absolutely seen it, which is kind of what makes this guy remarkable, because I feel like he's put his artistic stamp on it, and yet he hasn't really pissed off the book readers, you know?
Right.
It kind of does remind me of first, you know, four seasons of Game of Thrones in that way.
Sure. And I wonder if that maybe that speaks to maybe the Dune reader, you know, might have a different type of relationship with the material. I don't know.
I think the Dune reader would have already experienced Dune 84 and have seen like, okay, all right. My expectations are low because I saw a sting in a Speedo.
Back to our original part of the conversation. Why am I excited for Axel F?
right. Okay.
Because I would consider myself the Dune reader of Beverly Hills Cop movie.
Very good. So thank you, David, for the feedback. That voice file was just an MP3 file sent to our cocoonsofhorror@gmail.com. I don't know. Maybe we'll keep doing that. I'm not sure. This was a question sent to cocoonsofhorror@gmail.com. A question for the podcast by Robot K. If Teen Wolf 3 was filmed today, who would be cast as our new wolf? The sport tie needs to be hockey, of course. Now I kind of want it to take place in the early 80s when there were still players with no helmets. So I want to reframe this a tiny bit here.
So he wants a Teen Wolf with CTE.
he can only combat the head trauma by becoming the wolf.
He has a choice. He can live in mm-hmm. with crippling vertigo, or he's a wolf.
When we talked about this before, I mentioned that I almost don't like to recast these kinds of things with young actors. I just don't know a lot of young actors.
You're just casting every young actor as somebody from Stranger Things.
Right, yeah. I don't know. It's trubby. It's troubling.
Trubby? It's trubby. I like that. That's
it's
a new...
It's a little trubby for me.
You're so hip. It's just like it's like doing a podcast with the Urban Dictionary. You're so hip.
If neither of us would have commented on that, I think people would just have assumed that I learned that from my 15-year-old son.
Yeah. And they're like, "Whoa, my gosh!" And they're, I guess we'll just start using Trubby now. Stop trying to make Trubby happen.
I would really like to see this not set in the 80s. I would like to see this as an aging hockey player, someone who's on the back end of his career. And near retiring.
Meets Teen Wolf.
That's right. Maybe Redford. You know. Like a little nod to Slapshot because it was Newman in Slapshot. Right. Maybe he's had an extra long career because he has been able to wolf out so often. Maybe, I don't know. This is a film that plays with duality. Maybe when he's the wolf, he has different political views. Like he goes home, he's just a regular guy, but when he wolves out, he wants to storm the Capitol. Maybe that will.
I like that. That's a different animal altogether.
That's the werewolf movie we haven't seen yet. That when when you become your alter ego, you start watching Newsmax or something like that.
Teen Wolf 3, crossing the aisle. Senator Wolf.
Who would you like to see cast in a Teen Wolf 3?
Well, so that's the... So, I mean, there's a few paths, right? I mean, like Robot K is suggesting, like, we kind of return to that world, like, already in progress, right? Like, so we, there's a new wolf, but it's in the 80s. So what it suggests is that there was, you know, the two Howards that we've saw in one and two. And then, is this another Howard? Is this another cousin? Is it, you know, what, where is this taking place? I mean, obviously there's probably more werewolf clans, so you can pick it up from there and you get a young actor. You're suggesting we sort of come like where we are now. Now, I like the idea of let's do it now. Let's bring in Fox and Bateman, and introduce a new wolf.
Is Fox going to be in a wheelchair? Is that your idea?
There's a lot of things you could do with CGI.
Okay, if you're going to do a CGI Michael J. Fox, let me throw an idea at you. He's been in jail for all this time. Because we don't know what happens after he graduates high school. My guess is he's a werewolf. He's gone on a murder spree, right?
Wow, this got dark.
And so he's been in jail for a long time. But, you know, maybe after a 40-year sentence, he's out, but because he is the wolf, boy, is he ready for the NBA. And so you got this whole kind of like, you know, 70-year-old rookie in the NBA. I like that idea. It doesn't bring in any hockey. You know, maybe you bring in Bateman because he's taken up hockey and he's got to, like, you know, give advice to his cousin or something like that.
Michael J. Fox playing in the NBA now is no more ridiculous than Bronny getting drafted.
I thought you were going to say any more ridiculous than Tubbs playing on a high school team. And if you can bring back Tubbs, all the better.
It's Michael J. Fox's son or daughter is going through their wolf phase. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to pass on the same sort of like passive wolf culture or approach that his father passed on. When, you know, obviously, you know, hey, you got to work through your issues. You got to decide, are you, which part of the wolf do you want to guide you? But then bring Bateman in as, and he's just always the wolf. So Jay Fox is like taming the wolf and Bateman is always the wolf. And Bateman is like, nah, you got to embrace the wolf. Like he's it kind of returns to form, right? Because I mean, Bateman famously, when he was first getting started as a child actor, he was Mr. Hijinks. He was kind of the con artist. He was the one sort of pushing people towards the dark side.
He was the little devil on Ricky Schroeder's shoulder, telling him that he can watch pornography if he just puts his mind to it.
Yeah.
All right. So I like this idea. So I say we bring in Sydney Sweeney as the, maybe it's the granddaughter at this point. You know,
I don't know.
These guys are pretty old. So I don't know. You bring
really
in someone
that old. How old is Michael J. Fox?
I think you got to check your tricorder. Let's figure this out.
Michael J. Fox is 62.
Yeah, he's not having, he doesn't have a teenage daughter, Steve. You're 62.
We have a friend, a mutual friend from high school, who is 49, and he has a 2-year-old.
Look, that's interesting. Okay, so let's bring in the jail element. Let's say Michael J. Fox has been in jail. He's had a conjugal visit.
Okay, wow. Okay.
Later in life. And is it Boof? Well, Boof was in jail herself, I'm pretty sure, for something else.
Okay, so you're saying granddaughter.
So I say granddaughter Sydney Sweeney, she's gonna wolf out and she likes the feeling of wolfing out. And then Bateman comes along and says, hey, you like that, why don't you chase that? And then of course, you know, Michael J. Fox, after he gets out of jail, says, look, I've seen what that life leads to. You got to try to tame that. And so she has to kind of figure out how to balance both bits of advice. And maybe she finds a middle way. Maybe she finds a...
You really want Michael J. Fox to be an ex-con in this.
I do. I'm sort of committed to that idea at this point.
I'm picturing him still, like, he took over the hardware store. And then that becomes the Bateman, like, hey, look, you could tame the wolf. Mm-hmm. And maybe someday you get to take over the hardware store. Or you could be like me. He's a rock star. He's got, you know, he could show all of his boxing belts that he's won over the years. You know, I mean, obviously we know that he can.
Well,
he can
sing, something he can of dance. An evil genius. I mean, he's also a pretty smart guy. When he wolfs out, he studies really well.
Oh yeah.
So you can't reduce Bateman to just the monster, you know. Well, I hope that answers your question, Robot K. And we got.
I think we've introduced new questions.
There's so many new questions. It is odd for a hit like Teen Wolf to have one sequel, but not two sequels, right?
Well, but it did have it had the MTV series, right?
Which sure.
Was really not. I mean, it was really changing up the source material. I mean, you still have Scott Howard, but I think he plays lacrosse or something, and then you have the coach who's kind of a goofball coach, and then you have Styles. So the name, there's no Boof, but then it becomes more of like a horror teenage melodrama, like kind of in the vein of things like, I don't know, like Vampire Diaries and things of that nature. But so it doesn't have the same, outside of maybe the coach and Styles, it doesn't have the same whimsy. I mean, there's like all kinds of creatures and everything. So it really horrors out, which is fine.
Can we bring in Kevin Bacon as the new Coach Finstock?
So that's as he's in his new phase?
Well, a little bit, because I do want to bring in a little bit of villainy into that role.
Ooh, I like that. No, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready for it seems right there. And I'm actually, because of that infamous picture now of them both at the hockey game.
Yeah.
Which just,
yeah, there was a photo that Robot Case sent us that has both Bateman and Fox at a hockey game, and the text graphic below Bateman is actor in Teen Wolf 2.
It's amazing.
So, all right. We got an Apple iTunes review that I really appreciate. This is from Blue Knight Guitar. It's a 5-star review, Steve. It says, I would rather poop my pants daily for the rest of my life than give up my weekly Properly Howard. Steve and Anthony are the best. Thanks, guys, from the bathroom. Do you ever write reviews from the bathroom, Steve?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I do a lot of things from the bathroom.
Is it bad reviews on food you just ate?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I mean, I don't know when too much diarrhea is too much.
Too much.
So that's the thing. Is like my doctor asks questions like, you know, like, well, how often do you have diarrhea? And I'm like, today. Let me put it this way: when it's regular, I'm like, huh.
Wow, what a delightful surprise. By the way, we love these reviews. Thank you for writing in Apple iTunes. It really does help us out. So
imagine pooping your pants every day.
I mean, that's where we're headed, right? I mean, eventually, unless we die early, you know, unless we die young, which is becoming increasingly less possible with each passing moment,
we're getting close to the we're getting out of the oh man he was so young phase to like oh yeah okay
we're heading that direction. We're heading to the adult diaper stage of life. And
yeah, and I misunderstood adult diapers kind of in the same way that I misunderstood dick pics, because they're two things I don't encounter. Like there's a certain amount of naivete I have. I was talking about,
have you not been receiving my texts?
I honestly, now that I look at it, now I see what it was. I just thought you were showing me gophers in your garden. Well, like, I mean, this is a weird confession, but somebody said something about a dick pic, and I was like, oh, I never even considered that it wouldn't be flaccid. I don't know why I thought people were just sending befores.
Why would that be appealing?
Well, I don't know why the other is, but I mean, I just that was
to say this is what you can expect.
Yeah, just like
someone who has never sent one and never received one, I'm just guessing.
But yeah, when it was like, you know, when I was laughed at, I was like, oh, okay, now I get it. I mean,
look, you're gonna go out on a date as the wolf. You don't send exactly a photo of yourself as the man.
Yeah, this is.
If you're gonna show up as the wolf at the date, you better send me a photo of yourself having already wolfed out.
Yeah, that's right. It's not called Teen Man. Yeah, so going back to what I was trying to draw correlation,
you misunderstood adult diapers, you were saying.
Misunderstood adult diapers is that I just thought that you would just wear them and poop and go about your day. And somebody was explaining, like, no, like, they're supposed to be like the oops and then you go fix it, but that's to keep everything else intact. And I was like, oh, I just thought you just loaded up your britches and just kept going.
I think you've got the option. It's your choice at that point.
Right.
Do you need to keep going?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was like, what do you do about diaper rash? And they're like, well, you don't marinate. This isn't a crock pot.
My guess is that if you're, you know, driving an 18 wheeler and you're wearing adult diapers, you might wait a couple hours before you change out of it. Or maybe you're out, you know, maybe it's like,
if I'm still
my last
driving,
one, I'm going to have to make do here.
If I'm still make do for sure. If I'm still driving an 18 wheeler at the point where I'm crapping myself uncontrollably, I think I've just cut a hole in the seat at this point. We got to modify the truck.
Thank you, Blue Knight Guitar. I'm sure that
that's what you
were
hoping for.
This conversation was what you were anticipating. If you write an iTunes review for us, it will absolutely get read on this podcast, and we appreciate it.
Looking for Victor Meatless.
Someone stole my brand new Chevrolet, and the rent is due. I've got no place to stay. Ooh.
How you doing? You come in for a second, please?
Ooh. And it's hard to say, just how something's never changed. And it's hard to find in his strength to draw the line.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.